Thank you, Paul. Our guest this morning is Mike Royko, columnist of Chicago Daily News, discussing his new book, just released today in the Chicago bookstores, Boss, Richard J. Daley of Chicago. In a moment, our guest, after we hear from Paul Vodica and a word from our sponsors.
You admire Mayor Daley?
Yes, greatest mayor, yes.
Why?
Because he's so great, Stutz. If he was wrong, he couldn't be as great as he was. And if he was on the take, he couldn't do the things he could do. So he's so honest and dedicated today in the 20th century, in the last half part of it. And we know the history of politics, everybody being on the take. Here's a man who's dedicated to civilizing the community and the city. And nobody and everybody's scared to death because they have nothing on him.
That's amazing. So he does not even use the semi-muscle.
He don't use nothing. He takes his paycheck home and he sits home figuring how to do something for the city.
I've been in the neighborhood for 40 years, and I have to leave. We were promised homes, and I didn't think the mayor would really go wrong against us and sell us down the river just to build a university here. He had other sites that had the university. Why did he promise homes? And all of a sudden, he evicted me out of my house, and I'm living in a hotel. Now I have to leave my business.
What do you plan to do?
What I plan to do? I couldn't tell you. Maybe I can get on one of Mayor Daley's payrollers. 40 years is a long time in this neighborhood. You don't know where to go because you don't know if the mayor's going to throw you out again. Where am I supposed to go and live, in Grand Park?
A song, Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town, and two Chicago voices. The first in honor of Richard J. Daley, expressed by someone who's engaged in quasi-legal activities. The other, the voice of a woman somewhat bitter, antagonistic, driven out of a neighborhood after 40 years, Harrison Host, of the area in which he lived. My guest is Mike Royko, certainly the chronicler of our city. His new book is called Boss, Richard J. Daley of Chicago, Dutton, the Publishers. Jimmy Breslin has described it the best book about an American city ever written. Indeed, may well be. It's a book about a city, about a society, about us. And I'm thinking about these two voices, Mike, especially the woman's voice, Dolly Belmont. We think Richard J. Daley as a neighborhood man, proud of his neighborhoods and the nature of neighborhood, and even expressed now in his opposition to Judge Austin's order about scattered sites. Isn't there a contradiction involved here, and how come, since one neighborhood was destroyed, and he was in charge of it, in the name of urban renewal, and he speaks of preservation of neighborhoods?
Yeah. No, and it is a contradiction, and it's an interesting one about him, that he's always talked about being a neighborhood. He's prided himself on being a neighborhood type. He still lives in his old neighborhood, and before the 68 convention, one of his real arm-waving speeches, he said that he wanted the convention here in this great city, in this great neighborhood, in the greatest neighborhood in the country, my neighborhood. And that's about the only neighborhood he's paid any attention to preserving. I can't think of any. And he, once again, in 55, he campaigned as the neighborhood's guy. His first campaign. He set himself up as the opponent of the big downtown interests. He tried to paint Bob Miriam, his first candidate, as the lackey of the downtown interests. And he said, his slogan in that campaign will be that the sun doesn't just shine on State Street; it shines on all the neighborhoods. And since then, It's been funny. He's become State Street's guy and the downtown interest guy. And I can't think of any neighborhood in Chicago that can say that it's in better shape today than it was in 1955. I can think of a lot of neighborhoods that don't even exist today. I mean, they are now cleared. You go up to the near north side and you see vast areas of virtual wasteland. And you go out to the west side and see what's happened both through the city's policies and through that the spasm of riots. And you see the old valley, the old Italian neighborhood, which was really a beautiful thing, as you recall, when it was torn down, it was just starting to stand up. It was people out there were filled with such optimism. And I don't know of any neighborhoods in Chicago that that haven't suffered through his administration. And the only thing he can point at and say, I've made this better, is the downtown area, where he's put up, where not, he hasn't done it. I mean, the big real estate interests are ready for this type of expansion. It was to their interests. And so he's gone in the cycle from a guy who started out giving his first campaign talk in 1955 in a union hall out in the West Side and talking about the neighborhoods, to a guy in 1971 who gave his first campaign talk before the Chicago Association of Commerce and Industry, and now is in the process of scaring the heck out of the neighborhoods by using the black man and a little bit of public housing to panic them. And so he's done nothing for the neighborhoods.
That's the question. Of course, your book has been described as a myth-shattering work. And the myth itself, how is this myth maintained?
Well, part of it is that the city likes the myth. We like things big. We like to say we're better at this and better at that. I think once it started during his first term, that Daley could get a city moving, we wanted to believe this. Despite all the steady flow of evidence to the contrary, that he's none of the things that the myth makers have made him out to be, that he's a great administrator, a man of the people, that he can solve problems where other mayors can't, I think the city wanted to believe that. It's reassuring to think that we have someone who keeps the city going. We read that Lindsay can't keep New York going, but New York's going. Lindsay inherited a mass of problems that I don't see how anyone could expect him to straighten out in one term. Far more critical problems than Daley's had. And the papers, of course, have contributed to this myth. So have the Eastern publications, the big magazines. And part of it is that, you know, most Chicagoans don't go anywhere and look at the way life is elsewhere. They take a vacation now and then. Yeah. And so we believe it. We believe that he's done great things for Chicago.
You go back to the beginnings, too, of how the power came to be, that he's primarily a bookkeeper.
Daley is a pure organization man. He's a he believes in the seniority system. He's the kind of guy in a corporation that waits around for enough people to retire, die, make mistakes. He keeps his nose clean, learns the way the company operates, and then when people are buried or move on, he takes a step forward. He inched his way forward. He likes men like this. You know, so there aren't many dramatic figures rising in the Democratic Party that he brought in. A magic name like Adlai Stevenson, Daley had nothing at all to do with. Young Adlai, who was probably just on the basis of his name alone, is the only glamorous figure we've got in the Democratic Party. Came in through the side door, more or less forced himself on Daley. But Daley prefers the bookkeeper types. The guys he brings up are good organization men, solid organization men who dot their I's and cross their T's. But the I they dot and the T they cross is part of something uninspired. You know, you're not dealing with a Huey Long. You're dealing with a career. If they had all been blessed with better health, Daley might still be waiting in Bridgeport to move on, because he moved ahead only when people dropped dead.
So he outsat others.
Yeah.
What's remarkable about
and he attached himself always to a boss, and he would be absolutely loyal to the machine man. At its most corrupt, the Kelly Nash machine. There were many people within the Democratic organization who fought Kelly Nash. Daley never fought. He was always absolutely loyal to Kelly Nash. Daley doesn't believe in that, you know, the organization first. That's his primary loyalty.
In the breaking of this myth, Mike's done in this book called Boss, Richard J. Daley of Chicago. You've done some, the research is remarkable. Everybody comments about this, how you got it. And I'm not going to ask you about sources, but
the sources for so much of this were, for me, surprisingly easy to come by, because I've been working in, newspapering for 15 years, and I've been doing the column for 7 or 8 years, and along the way, I built up the sources without ever planning on using them for a book, because I'd never thought about doing a book. But when it came time to do the book, the sources were there. There were people I've known. I've covered politics, government. It was easy to write about the police department as it was then, and one day it came in a scandal because I was a police reporter for a while. It was simply a matter for me, being in a very lucky position of having gotten to know most of these people.
But there's something here as you go further. It's not just, by the way, you should make this clear, this is not an expose or a acerbic portrait of a man. It is certainly that, but more than that, of a particular city and perhaps of a society too. How someone who may be quite mediocre indeed is built up into someone, into the image. Eastern journalists have fallen for this and still do, as well as our own editors and publishers. And the reform, the credit he got for the appointment, say, of O.W. Wilson as police commissioner. Perhaps you have a way of analyzing this. That's
yeah, well, that was considered a great triumph, as it turned out, for Daley. He became the man who reformed the Chicago Police Department. And as he became the man who brought in Orlando Wilson. And it was another case. It was the same as all the other reforms that Daley was given credit for. He looks back now, and the editorialists will look back and describe how he cleaned up, under his administration, traffic court, went from being a cesspool of bribes to fairly well organized now, I guess, although there's much of that still going on. The police department, we no longer have the wide open shakedowns, but they refused to Daley's boosters refuse to recognize that he's never made one move toward reform until somebody got caught. And he had a scandal on his hands. Daley's really in the position of a guy who sits there and watches the arsonist set fire to the building without lifting a finger, and then when the fire is going, he calls the fire department, and then he wants a medal for it. He was mayor. The police scandal occurred, when was it, 1960 or 61? Well, he had been mayor for six years, and when people said this Chicago Police Department is the most corrupt police department in the country, Daley used to fly into a rage. We have the greatest police department in the country, he'd say. Well, he knew better than that. He had been a ward committeeman for many years. He had been in ward politics since he was about 19 years old, probably earlier. He knew what a terrible, corrupt police department it was. But until we had that the case of the coppers working as burglars, and he was forced into making changes, he didn't. And even there, it was a completely rigged thing. A citizens' committee was supposed to pick Orlando Wilson, and Daley picked him because he was the best. He had the best image, and would be the best man public relations in terms of public relations for Daley. So Daley even rigged the selection process. The same thing we just saw recently. We had this whole mess with the assessor's office, and everybody knows for years the assessor's been doing that, and this is no secret. If Daley is the expert on government that everyone says he is, then he sure knows what's going on in the assessor's office. He had one of his closest friends he put in there as assessor. So one scandal after another throughout his administration that would have probably knocked John Lindsay out of the state of New York if he had anything to compare with these scandals. These were scandals of dishonesty. These were scandals of corruption. These weren't scandals of too many people living in one place, of tough, aggressive unions that Lindsay's had to contend with in New York. These were scandals of crooks, theft, rascality, old-fashioned having your hand in the cookie jar. And every time one of these happens, Daley appoints a committee and institutes reforms that should have been fundamental years ago, and then they pat him on the back for saying, the mayor did it again.
What's astonishing about Mike's book is this very point, and also tells us, too, about our molders of opinion locally, Royko being, of course, and Len O'Connor, a couple of the notable exceptions, is that immediately he has never personally ever been attacked. It's always the underling who is.
Yeah.
He never,
that's
even
right.
Now with
that's
the
right.
CHA fiasco and the dishonesty of it, you know. Never personally, even the editorials.
No. He keeps the buffers between them. When something goes right, when there is something that the boosters consider to be a triumph for the city, then they all credit Daley.